Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Yesterday, there were clashes between the refugees and the Macedonian police because the refugees tried to go and catch the fence. The Macedonian police started throwing tear gas non-stop for around 6-7 hours. It was non-stop tear gas, the rubber bullets by the police to the refugees, water cannons and everything.
That's reporter Mariana Karakulaki describing violence at the Greek-Macedonian border. Details coming up. Also, the Somali government has executed an Al-Shabaab official known for threatening independent journalists. And controversy is swirling around one of Nigeria's top political leaders, the Senate President, Bukola Saraki. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, the Central Bank of Kenya is cracking down on commercial banks accused of illegal lending practices. Police issued arrest warrants Friday for 8 bankers for alleged unethical conduct. Lenny Ruvaga reports from Nairobi on what's ahead.
Since becoming governor at Kenya's central bank, Patrick Njoroge has led a charge against improper lending practices in the commercial banking sector. In the past year, the central bank has put 3 commercial institutions under receivership, which means that a government-appointed agency takes over the running of the bank. The most recent bank targeted was Chase Bank last week. The news caused a run on the bank as people frantically tried to withdraw their money. Chase Bank is currently closed. The central bank governor sought to reassure Kenyans late Sunday. Njoroge said the central bank would provide credit to financial institutions to meet their obligations.
We will avail a facility to any bank or microfinance institution that comes under liquidity pressures arising from no fault of their own. We will avail this facility for as long as necessary to return stability and confidence to the Kenyan financial sector.
He said withdrawals from those banks would be limited to $1,000. In the case of Chase, industry experts say they expect outside investors to buy up shares and bail the bank out. Businesswoman Caroline Nyokabi is one of the bank's more than 55,000 depositors.
Currently, we are not able to access it. Neither are we even able to get it from any other Visa ATM machine. It has really affected me because, seriously, we have just gotten our pay. And right now, we have to depend on other people to get the day going.
Police have issued arrest warrants for 2 Chase Bank executives and 6 others from the National Bank of Kenya. The central bank says Chase executives irregularly advanced $200 million to various entities without proper security and beyond the set regulatory limit. Half of this amount went to bank insiders. Alikan Sachu of the consulting firm Rich Management says the central bank will likely come after more banks.
Essentially, it is going to happen around the tier 3 banks because they've resisted capital increases for many, many years. They've basically built banking businesses on wafer-thin capital. Everyone is now focused and they just don't feel comfortable with the types of numbers that some of these smaller banks are telling us are the real numbers.
Sachu says the solution is consolidation. There are currently 42 different commercial banks operating in Kenya. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
The Somali government has executed an Al-Shabaab official known for threatening independent journalists who reported news critical of the extremist group. Hassan Hanafi Haji was executed today by firing squad at the Mogadishu Police Academy. He had been extradited from Kenya. Haji led Al-Shabaab's media unit, inviting journalists to press conferences and giving them battlefield tours. Somali officials say they have linked him to the deaths of at least five journalists. Since 2007, at least 25 journalists have been killed in Somalia. In related news, eight civilians died in a car bombing in the capital over the last 3 days. Five died today when a car bomb exploded in the Hamarawini district between a restaurant and local government offices. The attack occurred as the government announced Haji's execution. On Saturday, another car bomb killed three civilians and wounded five others at a restaurant popular with Somali national security agents. There are more reports today in the Greek town of Idomeni. They follow yesterday's violent protests between migrants and Macedonian police that lasted for hours. However, the situation appears calmer today. Reporter Mariana Karukalaki is in Idomeni. She spoke to VOA's Jody Kapowa about yesterday's violence.
Yesterday, there were clashes between the refugees and the Macedonian police, because the refugees tried to go and cut the fence. The Macedonian police started throwing tear gas nonstop for around 6-7 hours. It was nonstop tear gas, the rubber bullets by the police to the refugees, water cannons and everything. As some refugees described it, one told me it was like Palestine, like Gaza.
Were there any injuries?
Yes, 300 people were referred to the MSF for injuries from tear gas. I think around 7 people went to the hospital for serious injuries from rubber bullets. There were children among them. So, yeah, there were injuries because the Macedonian police was firing directly on refugees, as well as journalists. Journalists were also hit by rubber bullets. And the odd thing is that some of the tear gas was expired from 1996. One family told me that the protest began because the Macedonian police told them to go to the fence, because if 5,000 people cross, they will not be able to stop them. I doubt it was the Macedonian police, but this is what many refugees believe, that the Macedonians were going to let them in.
Now, last week when we spoke, you told us that a Greek official said that Idomeni would be cleared out within 2 or 3 weeks. Has anything happened?
No, it hasn't happened. This is what the authorities told a few weeks ago, but nothing happened. I don't think that they will try to evacuate the area. I don't think they have the ability to do it right now. They would have been able to evacuate Idomeni when there were 5,000 people, but right now there are 11,000. You cannot do this without using violence. And the authorities are not going to use violence here.
That's reporter Mariana Karakulaki from the Greek-Macedonian border. She spoke to VOA's Jody Kapowa. The UN Refugee Agency has condemned the use of tear gas in Idomeni. A spokesman says the use of tear gas harms the perceptions of refugees as well as Europe's image. Also, AFP reports that some Bulgarians have started to make citizens' arrests of migrants. TV reports showed several migrants on the ground with their hands tied. Some at the scene shouted, "Go back to Turkey." The other migrant news, AFP reports, Libya's Coast Guard today rescued 115 migrants on the Mediterranean east of Tripoli. A Coast Guard official says those on board the sinking vessel were from Africa. They've been taken to detention centers in Italy. The migrants were trying to sail to Italy, about 300 kilometers from Libya. Fourteen past the hour, you were listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Saudi King Salman bin Abdulaziz Al Saud returns home today after offering strong support for Egypt's fight against terrorism. The 80-year-old monarch spent 5 days in Cairo and met with President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi. The two leaders signed several multi-billion-dollar investment deals. They included a plan to build a bridge over the Red Sea connecting Saudi Arabia and Egypt. Egypt also agreed to redraw its maritime borders with Saudi Arabia, placing two islands in the Straits of Tiran in Saudi territory. The agreement provoked Twitter protests, accusing Mr. Sisi of selling the islands. The islands, historically, had belonged to Saudi Arabia and were leased to Egypt in 1950. A former Nigerian security advisor charged with looting millions of dollars from arms contracts will have his case heard by ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States. The French news agency reports the ECOWAS court has put aside objections by the Nigerian government in the case of Sambo Dusuki. The court says the case involves fundamental human rights issues. Dusuki says he was unlawfully arrested and detained without trial. He's been detained since December, even though he's been granted bail. And controversy is swirling around one of Nigeria's top political leaders, Senate President Bukola Saraki. He is on trial for allegedly making a false declaration of assets during two terms as governor of Kuwara State in the north-central part of the country. He's also been cited in the recent Panama Papers scandal. Leaked documents from a law firm in the Central American country allege Saraki owns at least two offshore accounts. From Abuja, reporter Paul Okolo spoke to VOA's William Eagle about the controversy.
Senate President Bukola Saraki is facing charges of false declaration of assets at the Code of Conduct Bureau. He's also being accused of having foreign bank accounts, which is contrary to the law of the land, especially for public office holders. He's been in public office for the last 12 or so years, served two terms as governor of Kwara State, and he's been a senator since he left the position of governor. And he's been having foreign bank accounts during this period, according to the charges.
What does he say in response to these charges?
The Senate president is saying that these charges are politically motivated by his opponents, who didn't want him to be Senate president in the first place. And when he went against the party's order to run for the position and won, the charges then came up, and he was invited by the Code of Conduct Bureau to explain these charges. And that is what has led to the trial that is ongoing now.
So he has declared that when he was governor, that he did indeed report all the assets that were required of him by law. And he says that the charges brought against him now are politically motivated because, as you say, he went against party elders and through friends in his ruling party and other parties got himself elected as Senate president last June.
That's correct.
I understand in the press that there are those who are calling for his resignation.
There are calls from a cross-section of society for the Senate president to step down. One of the cardinal campaign points of President Muhammadu Buhari is to wage a head-on war against corruption. And so he's not, if you like, in the good books of the party hierarchy, who have not come out really to say whether they are the ones behind this trial or not. There are several civil society organizations who are campaigning for him to step down, other political associations, students groups, asking him to go. Not that he doesn't have his own support base too. His home state of Kwara is behind him in this case, and he's a very popular figure in his state.
If he is found guilty, what could be his potential punishment?
He stands to lose the current office of Senate President, first of all, and then the assets in question will be forfeited. The Code of Conduct Bureau is also empowered to bar him from holding any public office for 10 years.
Saraki has also been named as part of the Panama Papers scandal. What has he said publicly about this? Does he admit that he did have offshore accounts?
The Senate president is denying that he owns those offshore assets, claiming that they belong to his wife, who is from a well-to-do family. But the newspaper has gone ahead and insisted, and from what they have, the Senate president's wife actually signed off those assets to her husband, the Senate president, indicating that they really actually belong to him. So they are sticking to their guns that the Senate president is the owner of those assets that were recently exposed by Panama Papers.
That's reporter Paul Okolo in Abuja. He spoke to VOA's William Eagle. Although Ebola devastated health services in three countries in West Africa, a survey of 36 African countries shows improvement in access to urban clinics. The two-year survey by Afrobarometer confirms that rural clinics are few, and 14% of Africans had to bribe officials to get medical treatment. Cameroon has the most access to health clinics, and Namibia has the lowest. The survey's lead author is Daniel Aramato of the Ghana Center for Democratic Development. From Accra, he spoke to David Arnold.
From our analysis, we found that in the 36 countries that we survey, at least in 62% of the areas where we conducted a survey, we found health facilities present. But then if you look at the rural-urban division, then there were more in the urban centers than in the rural areas. Also, we found that 49% of the respondents said they've gone without medicine or medical care in the year preceding the survey. There were also some issues in terms of difficulties that they experienced whilst trying to access healthcare. For that, we had about 42% of the respondents saying they encountered difficulties. And also, we had about 14% of those who actually made attempt to access service saying they paid bribe before they were able to get the medical care they needed.
Does that 14% surprise you?
Yeah, they said they offered bribe or did favor to an official before they were able to access service that they needed. And then we had about 46% of these respondents assessing their government performance in delivering health care negatively.
And in your survey, what were the highest priorities of need among your respondents?
The highest was unemployment, and then the second was health. We presented them with about six key sectors. And then we pose the question whether if government is thinking of doing extra funding in any of these sectors, which ones would they propose for their governments to channel the extra funding into? And once again, health came up as the second topmost priority.
What will you do with the survey? Is this designed to give these governments in Africa new direction?
If you look at the current document, what we are trying to do with it is more like an analysis, a global analysis based on the 36 countries where we did the survey. We also do a series of dissemination on the country-specific findings. And before we go into those country-specific findings, we almost always give the opportunity to government officials arrange and go in and give them the presentation, inform them about the findings and all those things, with the hope that policymakers will look at these kind of issues coming up from their own citizens and then work with them to address whatever difficulties and challenges their citizens are facing.
That was Daniel Aramato of the Ghana Center for Democratic Development in Accra. He spoke to VOA's David Arnold in Washington. The Zimbabwean government has ordered a blogger who wrote a report critical of President Robert Mugabe to report to police tomorrow. Press freedom advocates say the summons is just the latest action in a broader government campaign to silence dissent on online media. Sebastian Mumfu reports from Harare.
The head of the Zimbabwe Media Center, Ernest Mudzengi, and two of his colleagues were summoned by police on Thursday and Friday. The media center provides facilities to freelance reporters and runs the website for the Zimbabwe Sentinel newspaper. Police questioned Mudzengi for 9 hours over a Sentinel article on an alleged plot to bomb a dairy plant owned by the First Family. Police have summoned the blogger Mlondolozi Ndlovu, who wrote the piece. Hlahla Ngwenya runs the Zimbabwe office of the Media Institute of Southern Africa, known by its acronym MISA.
The police are now trying to harass journalists under the pretext that they are investigating stories that they would have carried. Spending hours in a police station being interrogated on a story which occurred publicly is chilling enough for any journalist who intends to pursue sensitive stories. For us as MISA, we strongly condemn this practice, which is rearing its ugly head in our journalism, and we call upon the authorities to just stop it forthwith, as it is sending a chilling effect among media practitioners.
In 2002, Zimbabwe made it illegal to denigrate President Robert Mugabe. The Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights says that just since August, they have assisted 127 people arrested for posts on social media sites like Facebook and Twitter. The latest case is that of a 46-year-old Zimbabwean whose trial is scheduled to start late April. The man was arrested after he posted photos of Mugabe on WhatsApp that authorities said showed the 92-year-old leader as frail and, quote, incapacitated, unquote. President Mugabe told supporters last week that the government is cracking down on what he called abuses on the internet.
You know, that technology, yabo, ICT,
Mugabe said his government will be looking into security measures the Chinese government has put in place to stop these online abuses. Facebook, YouTube, and Google are among the websites blocked in mainland China. Numerous foreign news sites have also been blocked, including VOA. In April, China blocked access to Time magazine and The Economist over articles critical of the Chinese President Xi Jinping. Zimbabwe's Minister of Information, Communication and Technology, Super Manduwa Nzira, has not given details on what controls are coming, but he said this weekend that the new measures, quote, would not be shallow. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer Bill Workinger and our engineer Keith Holmes, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next on Let's Talk, transportation in Africa. What are the common ways of transportation? Are they convenient? Join host Sandy Shomari and his guests discussing transportation in Africa. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa. Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the International Criminal Court and African leaders, as well as ICC's ruling on Kenya's Deputy President William Ruto. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm Linor Mudu. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.